All right, here we go. And officially, a 3, 2, 1. Shop Soccer 90 for all your FC Dallas, U.S. national team, and international club jerseys, tees, and scarves. Check out the new U.S. men's national team youth jerseys featuring Ferreira, Pepe, Pulisic, and McKennie. In addition to that, the Adidas FC Dallas Unity pre-match tops are now in stock. Limited supplies available, so when they're gone, they're gone. Remember, all third degree at the podcast listeners receive 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code third degree at soccer90.com. Live it, love it, wear it. Well, hello there, FC Dallas curious fans. Welcome to another episode of Third Degree, the podcast. Hi, it's me, Peter. And with me, of course, is my two friends. First off, Dan Crook, live from Richardson. Dan, come in, Dan.
Hey, thanks for holding things up so I could order my Unity pre-match top from Soccer 90. That's no bullshit, and I actually just did.
All right. Did you get it? Did they have it in your size?
Yeah, those fat boy sizes really go out of stock quick, so you got to get in there.
The fat bastard sizes. All right, very good. And your hero, my hero, everybody's hero, live from somewhere in our great land. I'm not sure where that would be. Via his phone today because the internet at his hotel has conked out. But we're doing this anyway for you, the good listener. It's Buzz Carrot. Come in, Buzz.
Hi, Peter. Calling in today from Santa Rosa, New Mexico. And yes, when you're on a soccer reporter style budget, the hotel internet is not always that great.
You didn't go up and bang your fist on the front desk and say, "You got to fix the internet. I got to do the pod."
Well, you know, it's 8 o'clock at night when I got in here and it wasn't working. And so I called the front desk and it's whatever overnight person is. You know, they're like, "Oh, I got to call the boss." And then they call back and said, "They're working on it," quote, air quotes. So, you know, it still is not working an hour later. So that'll tell you how quick they're going to get it fixed.
Okay, so there hasn't been an FC Dallas game in a while. There is one this Saturday against Vancouver up in Frisco at 8 p.m. We'll talk a little bit and preview that here in a few minutes. The only real soccer to talk about is the U.S. men's national team. And obviously, Jesus, since we last talked, had a four-goal thriller against, who was it they scored? Who was that team?
Grenada?
Oh, Grenada. Yes, sorry. Yeah. And then it was the game last night in the mud pit of El Salvador. I want to set that aside for a little bit, though, guys, because I want to talk about the thing that's been absolutely fascinating to me, which was yesterday's somewhat surprising announcement from the league that they finally got their media deal done. And this is not what I was anticipating. You know, Don Garber for a while was really, really convinced he was going to get a $300 million media deal. He never really put years to it, but I think he's at least gotten a little bit close, although the more as time goes by and the more you kind of dig into the details and learn, the less awesome the whole deal appears to be, but we'll talk about that. MLS signs a deal with Apple TV to launch its own streaming service. Within the Apple TV ecosystem universe kind of thing, 10 years, $2.5 billion with a B. That's $250 million a year. And I guess, Buzz, what was your immediate reaction when you saw the news?
Well, I was surprised that Apple was in because I thought that at one point Apple had said they were basically out. That is a nice chunk of money. It is an improvement in the terms of money over what most of the teams were doing locally. Now, certainly, a team like FC Dallas was not making any money on their local deal. So, in a way, this is the local deal, sort of. And the headline that I noticed right away was that MLS can still talk to and is still talking to ESPN and Fox about doing, you know, national game of the week type stuff on top of this. They won't be exclusive because every game will be on this Apple thing. But there still is some room to add some other things. There's some things I really don't like about the whole thing, but that jump in money is certainly something you have to like if you want this league to be surviving.
Yeah, I will say the thing that I find very confusing, Buzz, and I think you'll agree with me with this, is that in the league's press release, they use a very specific phrase, exclusive destination. And in my business, and Buzz, your business, that means something very specific, which means this is the only place you can get this. So this side reporting from The Athletic that they're in negotiations to, even with ESPN as we speak, to do this additional linear showing of games on ESPN or potentially even Fox, I really find surprising, because if they had said your exclusive destination for streaming or exclusive destination for broadcast, you know, something a little bit more specific. But when they said exclusive destination, period, I was really confused as to why, one, Apple would want to let them do that, and two, why would an ESPN or a Fox want to jump in on that? I'm a little confused as to why that is still a thing dangling out there.
Well, the reason I would think Apple would be interested is that you're still looking at Apple, reading all these announcements. There's all this talk about still building the game, you know, and if you're Apple and your MLS games are only on Apple, you might not be getting your product in front of the other sort of audiences. You're not going to get your crossover to other sports. You're not going to get your cross promotions. So that would be why they would want to allow MLS to still do some of those things, so that you get your MLS game of the week promo during Monday Night Football, or if you're on FS1, you know, during a national team broadcast, they'll mention, oh, don't forget, tomorrow is the game, the big game of the week. Because you still want to try and attract eyeballs to your product that aren't there already. You still need to expand your market share. So I think that's the way you do it. I'm sure also there was a reduction in the overall number. If you still want to talk to ESPN and Fox, we're not going to give you that $300 million a year. We're only going to give you the $250 million a year. You know, I'm just totally speculating here on terms of the numbers and what they would be. But I'm sure there's some back and forth across all these things in that regard.
Mm.
And that would be the main reason. Like, you still want to, even if you're Apple, you want MLS to grow. You want this sport to grow. So therefore, you want people to see this product some outside of everything else. And you have everything else. You have, you're replacing the league-wide package. You're replacing all the local packages. You're replacing much of the national package. Just maybe not all of it. Maybe still try and get in front of some people.
All right, Dan, as an Englishman who grew up as a kid and ended adulthood feeling lucky if you got, you know, two or three Premier League games on your television on any given weekend, day, or evening, this must blow your mind that an entire league's all of the games would be available for one price in one place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's just been the evolution of that whole mind-blown thing. Going from MLS Live, where it's like, you know, you had your market blackouts and certain availabilities, to ESPN Plus, where it continued a little bit, particularly on those other national broadcasts, and now everything is available potentially in one location, including side programming produced by Apple or by the team themselves.
So. Yeah, so a few things that I want to throw out here to clarify for people that I think were a bit confusing and vague when the announcement came out. I did a Twitter Spaces thing in the minutes after it came out, because I was just so, my mind was spinning in a thousand ways and I just wanted to talk to people about it. And at the time, there was a lot of things that I didn't know, or at least had questions about, that have become more clear. And I think the one thing that I think most people are confused about is the fact that this is not a subscription that will be part of the Apple TV Plus existing $5 a month service. This will be its own streaming thing that you will have to pay for on its own. The mystery remains of what that amount is. And I was doing some math the other day. So if you are a follower of the Premier League and you want to watch all the games here in the United States, you've got to buy a Peacock premium account, which is $5 a month. The league lasts 10 months, so it's $50. So for most, for many live games on a particular weekend and then on demand of everything, it's $50 for 10 months, or essentially $50 a season. So what does that tell us, or what should an MLS season for everything cost? And I don't know what that number is. Buzz, you got an idea what you'd pay for that?
Well, I would imagine it'll be in the same ballpark. You know, it's granted, Major League Soccer is not the Premier League, but you're still talking about, you know, your 30 domestic teams. And if you're interested in this league, you know, you're going to be interested in getting this package. Now, understand too, Peter, I've been involved in some conference calls about this kind of stuff because of what I do. One thing that they're really pushing hard to the teams to promote is that if you are a season ticket holder, you get this for free.
Right. Yeah.
Of any team. So your core audience. Now, how big a season ticket package holder do you need to be? Can you do like a flex pack? I mean, all these things are going to be worked out, right? I mean, they're still talking about the language in the press release. We're still talking about the exact nature of all these packages are going to be to be determined. But I would expect it to be somewhere in the neighborhood of like $4 to $5. That seems pretty reasonable, you know, based on that's kind of the price of everybody's streaming things that you come across, you know, for the most part. You know, the Paramount's a good example of it being, you know, $5. So I don't know why it wouldn't be sort of in that same neck of the woods.
Yeah. I'm trying to do the math. So March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. That's 8 months. So yeah. So it could be a little less if it was $5 a month.
So MLS Live was like $75 yeah. for the season, right?
Yeah. That's what I remember it being, like $69 or $59, something like that, I think.
Yeah, because you had like an early bird discount. Either way, it beats the nearly $200 I have to pay for EFLi Follow to watch Luton games.
Sure, and here's the crazy part: is it's there are no blackouts. You can watch any game in the league whenever you want, live or on demand. And I think the other thing that I think people are a little bit confused about is you don't have to have an Apple TV device to do it. Apple TV, the app, is available on pretty much any mobile device or tablet. And then, of course, you can just do it out of a browser on anything connected to the internet. You'll be able to do it. Now, what'll be interesting is this going to be a streaming system that is completely separate outside of Apple TV Plus or the Apple TV app? Like, is there going to be an MLS Plus app that is just built by Apple or some third-party vendor by Apple? Or will you have to log into the Apple TV app itself to access the content? And I guess nobody knows the answer to that.
I was sitting here trying to think, like, what would it likely to be? I would imagine that they'll have some kind of integration with the current MLS app. I mean, it would make a lot of sense that you could have a button, like if you're looking at the score of a game, there should be a button of go watch it here on your Apple TV app.
Yeah.
You know, that seems fundamentally easy to me. You know, the interesting thing to me about this whole package is that there is no cable component as far as I know. You know, no broadcasts, no DirecTV, no Dish, you know, so that's very different. This is the first network, the first league to do this. You know, will some negotiations happen to put this kind of thing into those environments? I mean, certainly people have smart TVs now that are going to have internet in them. So maybe that kind of thing will work better. Everybody has their Fire Stick or their Google Chromecast or whatever. Your Roku, all these things do this app automatically. So those lines are not merging, but breaking down. And one of the things that the Sports Business Journal article talked about was the interest that Apple had because MLS's core audience is a young tech savvy audience. And it's almost like 60% millennials and Gen Z. And it's people that are not urban's the wrong word, but they're sort of hipsters in early kind of tech kind of people, and they want to drive this kind of package, you know. So it's a new landscape. Peter, you and I talked over and over and over again about how the last 2 years, because of COVID, how much the landscape has changed.
Yeah,
this is a new landscape thing. So a lot of it's going to be invented and made for this very first application of this. And it's on that level, it'll be fascinating to watch it happen.
Yeah, they said in a couple of different places that the $250 million a year is kind of a minimum, that if Apple was to sell enough subscriptions, there's then a revenue split after it exceeds a certain number. And, of course, as you said earlier, Buzz, if MLS is allowed to and is successful in negotiating a deal with broadcast like ESPN or Fox to do a certain number of games, that's going to be, you know, not an insignificant amount of money. Now, here are some downsides or some things that haven't been talked too much about to consider. First off, MLS has to pay to produce all of these games themselves. So you can go ahead and take that $250 million a year and just start cutting numbers out of it, because that is not going to be an insignificant amount of overhead, because it sounds like what the plan is, and we're going to get more into this because this is going to lead into downer aspect number two, which is they are going to centralize the production and broadcast and calling of all of these games from a facility, Buzz, in New Jersey, you said?
Well, no, the facility has yet to be determined where it's going to be, which is I think is fascinating because of the timeline we're talking about. You're talking about less than a year to build out said facility. You can use the example, it is like the way USL does games all out of Orlando, whether it be USLC or USL1, it's going to be a central facility like that. Now, I say New Jersey because if you've paid attention to broadcast, you'll know that they've talked about on the broadcast about how VAR is now done out of that central New Jersey facility. And all the cameras from the game are sent to that central Jersey facility already for
it's
VAR.
In Atlanta.
Oh, is it in Atlanta? Okay, so maybe there you go. Maybe you go. Maybe it's going to be Atlanta. I thought it was in Jersey. The NBA one is in Jersey. So, you know, where it's going to be is yet to be determined, I'm told. But it's going to be a unified production center where you can have crews do multiple games. If you have them do an East Coast game, then they can do a West Coast game because of the way the times will line up. You know, you're going to do all the productions out of one facility. They're all going to be neutral broadcasts out of that facility. They'll have a little bit of limited production on site in order to put the cameras together with a little bit of the audio pickup. All that gets piped to the central facility and they do all the games out of a single setup.
All right. But see, and you and I were going back and forth about this, Buzz, on a text exchange, because I was seeing people talk about the millions of dollars that MLS is going to have to invest to build this facility and all of the crews and buy all the equipment and all of the, you know, the tech stack and all of that that goes with it. But I'm under the assumption that there are already existing production entities that have this infrastructure ready to go, and Apple could just hire them as a third-party vendor to do that for them.
Yes, there are multiple companies that already do this. As I specifically mentioned, Orlando for the USL, for example.
Right.
There's a company I know of in Kansas City that does this kind of thing for college basketball. You know, this kind of production build out is not as complicated as it would have been 5 years ago. Now we have all these things that are basically internet based production. You know, your control room is effectively computers instead of TV equipment. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's like, it's a lot easier to do than it used to be. The question is, does somebody already have a facility set up that can do this? And will they do it cheaper than you can set it up for yourself? That's where this year timeline comes in. That has me a little bit confused, because getting a facility set up in a year, I would have said was not possible. But as I just was talking about, it's a whole lot easier than it used to be. So we're going to find out. And it may be that, like, listen, the deal just got done. So it's like what they think's going to happen at the end of this month, they may be like, we were out of our minds. There's no way we can get it done in a year. And so some of these things may change, but this is the ideas that are being proposed now based on the structure of the deal, the announcement, and what we know and what we're hearing from people we know that are in television, which is me in some cases, in other cases, other people, mm-hmm. you know, so, we're going to see. I think the whole point of them bringing in-house is the economies of scale and to reduce costs. And some of these ideas are being tested already with their MLS Next Pro, you know, with their Game of the Week concept they do with that. Some of these concepts are already being broken in through what USL does, you know. So you have to also remember, too, that the world of other pro sports is changing. I'll tell you, for example, the Mavericks don't travel all their crew anymore for road games. They do a lot of that production for road games is done out of a facility in Dallas. They just bring all the cameras back and they put it all together. And almost all the regionals, all the Bally's, all these other regional sports networks, they all operate that way now. Houston does the same thing in the Houston market. And a friend of mine in San Diego is doing the same thing for the Padres. You know, it's just the world has changed. People don't travel anymore. They do this thing where they bring back the cameras and they cut it all together, you know, in your little control room effectively that you can build out for significantly cheaper and a lot less time and money, and you can do it yourself.
What do you mean by bring back the cameras?
Well, in the sense of the way all the cameras are fed via fiber to VAR in Atlanta. Ah, okay. Or if you watch the NBA, all the cameras are fed via fiber back to a facility in Jersey.
Okay.
And they and or NFL reviews are now done. Like,
yeah.
It's all lickety, it's lightning fast. And you can I've actually done productions like this. There's, you know, by the time it comes into your facility and whips through your control room, there's about a half a second delay. But it's not bad enough that you can't control cameras and talk to camera guys and get them to adequately cover the game. They have instructions ahead of time anyway. They know what they're doing. So there are tiny setbacks. There are tiny negatives to doing it this way. But the overall overriding thing is the insane reduction in costs you're looking at in order to do it yourself from this central location where you don't have to have these trucks rolling in all the time. You don't have to have these big, massive crews on site all the time. It's the economies of scale are massive in terms of savings.
Yeah, there are so many intricate parts to this and how they're going to, I mean, I am really interested to find out what this centralized facility thing is and Buzz, because of the time, I don't know how they'll ever build that out in time for the start of the 23 season. That's why I wonder if they're just going to hire somebody to do it. But getting back to the things that are bummer about this, bummer number two, and probably the one that is the most, I don't know. This is the one that bums me out the most, which is we do know that officially the league has stated that the local TV coverage, and in Dallas's case, that is our beloved Mark Folwell and Steve Davis, is done for. It's out. That because the league has decided to follow more, I think the best way to make the analogy is MLS is following more of the NFL model of broadcast versus the baseball or basketball model of broadcast, where they will have a centralized group of duos that they will assign to games every week, and those guys will, again, from a centralized location, call all of the games instead of being on location. I'm assuming there will be going to be certain games where people will be live in the stadium, but I think they're all going to be there. But what we're not going to get, to the best of our understanding, are Mark and Steve at Toyota Stadium calling the game for a TV broadcast.
Yeah, that's correct. All the broadcasts are going to be neutral broadcasts like the NFL. Never forget Don Garber came from the NFL. Now, the teams are all being allowed to do their own radio. So some of the teams are going to pivot where they'll just take their current, you know, TV guys and put them on radio. I can't speak for Mark or Steve or FC Dallas, obviously. Would those guys want to do radio? Would the national broadcast be interested in a guy like Mark Folwell from one of their key national spots? I mean, why would they, right?
Yeah.
Would, you know, could you do it from Dallas? Do you have to go to the central location? I mean, all these things are going to be part of it, right? Mark's primary give, of course, is the Mavericks. That's always going to be his number one thing. So you have to balance all those things out. If you're a guy like him, or if you're a guy like Steve, you know, does Dallas still want those guys to do radio? Would they pivot to, you know, some of the other people they use already on their radio instead? So when you read in the press release, there's going to be this option for home team play-by-play. That's all they'll be doing, is they'll be taking your radio broadcast and offering it as a SAP, perhaps, secondary audio on this national broadcast.
Yeah,
but it won't match the graphics, it won't match the production.
Well,
the national production is the national.
And the other thing is I think, you know, just for the a little bit of dangerous technical understanding that I have about this, dating back to my time working on over-the-top apps, is the technical reality of trying to take various different audio feeds, whether it be like in some markets, it could be a terrestrial radio broadcast audio feed, and other ones, it could just be purely an online feed, and how they're going to sync that up with the video. Dude, that sounds like a technical nightmare to me. And I'm I'm dying to see how that works. I'm just gonna sit back with my popcorn and check that out.
Yeah. But,
I mean, yeah, Buzz, well, you probably understand that better than I do. That just doesn't sound like that is easy. That's going to be easy to accomplish.
It's not. It's not, because usually radio is actually a lot quicker than TV, particularly if you're not having, if all you're doing is streaming and you're not having to go through, you know, your local radio stations or whatever. But everyone will be different. I mean, obviously, in the case of trying to match radio to broadcasting, you can just get it close enough, and that'll be close enough. Because, you know, it's like, what I mean by, it, like, it's not going to match the production is that, like, you know, the graphics aren't going to match what your radio guys are talking about. The video's not going to match what your radio guys are talking about. Your radio guys are just going to talk about the game. And so as long as it's, like you say, as long as Mark, if he does it, I'm not speaking for him, he says, okay, and we're kicking off. As long as that's within, like, a second of the actual real kickoff in terms of the picture, that's close enough, right? So it's not simple. And also keep in mind the language of the press release, too. They talked about Spanish. They talked about Portuguese. They talked about getting these multiple other languages going for these broadcasts, you know. So obviously audio is a significant part of what they're looking at, you know. How it's all going to come together, again, promises made in the initial press release and signing of a contract are not the promises that get executed a year later, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with some of this stuff.
Dan, I'm interested in your perspective about the significance or the meaning of the fact that they didn't sign a deal that ended, around the time that the World Cup here in the United States takes place in 2026, and instead signed a deal that goes well beyond that tournament.
Yeah, you know, the weird thing that stuck out for me was how rushed the announcement seemed, that they had to have a media call that kind of explained things that were left out the press release and explained some of the phrasing of it, and that the announcement kind of seemed to come out of nowhere compared to what a lot of the way MLS operates. So that combined with the length of the deal, it kind of seemed like a very much like panic and just get it done, ahead of this World Cup, ahead of all the announcements and a lot of the organization for the 2026 edition too. I mean, I don't know what like you and Buzz felt. Just to me, everything kind of seemed like they just grabbed at the best quick offer they could in that sense.
Yeah, I'm a little confused as to if this was a decision based on, I mean, initially when I read it and there was no hint, and because the press release said exclusive destination, and two, to me that meant that they were not going to be doing any kind of linear deal with ESPN, Fox, ABC, CBS, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. My reaction on yesterday when I was talking about it on the Twitter spaces was that it was ballsy. It's like, oh crap, MLS is just saying we don't need you anymore. We're going to do this on our own. And I thought that was a really interesting idea, but now that I guess eventually they're going to announce something, linearly with ESPN or Fox, kind of defeats that. I don't know, man. There's just I can't quite tell if MLS just took the best offer they could get, because they weren't getting anything else close to that, Is this kind of a weird marriage of convenience? Is ESPN getting a big-time brand to give them a lot of money, at least what is perceived as a lot of money, and in exchange, Apple is getting a sports league, that an established sports league, which is what they don't have in their tool belt at this point. I can't figure out if that's maybe the real truth behind this deal.
Yeah,
well, go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, it reminded me a little bit of when they signed the ESPN Plus deal and no one knew what ESPN Plus was going to be, except with fewer, we'll iron that out when we get around to figuring it. It was, you know, other than the market blackouts, which came in season two, they kind of seemed to have a fair grasp of how everything was going to work. It wasn't going to be the initially proposed ESPN hosts MLS Live. It was going to be, you know, But like, it seemed like the media call yesterday, and I haven't listened to it, but just going by what people who were on it have said, it just seemed like a whole lot of, you know, every question was, yeah, we haven't quite figured that out yet. Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Well, Buzz, I'm sure because you're in this business, you probably have heard similar things. Everybody that I have talked to that is in some way tied or related to any of this in one way, shape, or form or the other has said they were completely in the dark and had only been working off of just essentially rumors and innuendo and speculation that until literally yesterday, they got a heads up about 10 minutes beforehand that it was coming down and that, and they weren't even told the details. It was just like, hey, this deal is getting announced, just so you know.
Yeah. People I know at the local level basically were invited to like conference calls, you know, 30 minutes before the release came out. You know, this whole deal was done by the national MLS office, and they had told all the teams to get out of their deals. And then none of the teams were involved at all. This was all done by just a handful of people, a couple of people at the league office. And for me, the reason I think it all appears kind of rushed is because I think it's come together very quickly once the U.S. qualified for the World Cup. Because somebody like Apple, and this thing is worldwide now, that was important. I think you noticed something in there, is they see the U.S. getting back into the World Cup, and they now look at, we have from when that happened, which was what, let's roughly call that a month and a half ago, whatever exactly it was, 2 months ago. Right. They've knocked this deal out, and now they're getting it out launched and announced prior to the venue announcements, because MLS and Apple are going to want to be involved with all the World Cup coverage through Dubai through the end of this year, the back half of this year. They want the deal in place so they can start advertising it and they can get it cross promoted through the US's involvement in the World Cup, massive World Cup this winter, leading into the first season of this new thing. Right. Huge buildup. A bunch of these guys are going to be that are in the World Cup, not a bunch, some of them in the World Cup play in this league, right? You're also going to look ahead to that next World Cup 4 years down the line with the venues. You're going to want to be involved with them as you go forward in terms of promotion. And that's the thing with this deal, right? This is the first of a thing like it. So Apple and MLS are going to want to get this product out in front of as many people as possible. And the very best way to do that is the World Cup buildup and the world, and you had to get it. So you had to get it done. Once you knew they were in, you had to get it done before the venues come out. So like, it's all about, all the rest is details. Everything else was get it out so you could get involved in this build.
Yeah. And this is part of the thing that I've, you know, been spinning around in my head, which is the big shock to me that this was a 10-year deal, because clearly MLS is getting more money between now and 2026 than I think they ever possibly realistically thought they could get. But I also think they are potentially leaving a tremendous amount of money on the table post-World Cup, if in fact, for whatever reason, that turns out to be the best World Cup ever, or the United States men's team in 26 is able to really go far into the tournament, and Major League Soccer, and you know, maybe that's the transformative moment where there's some sort of like official merger between them and Liga MX, which I would assume then also allow for some sort of, I have to assume that somewhere in this contract with Apple, there's a clause or a triggering effect that says, hey, if we decide to merge with Liga MX, we get to come back and renegotiate this deal, which would make sense for all parties. But I do think that Major League Soccer potentially left a lot of money on the table starting in the season that begins in 2027, if in fact this World Cup goes as well as I think we all think it will.
Yeah, you and I are old enough to remember the explosion in soccer after the 94 World Cup. And everybody we know that are a lot smarter than us in soccer in the United States is expecting a similar kind of explosion after that World Cup 4 years from now. And I think it's not a coincidence that this deal encompasses MLS Next Pro and MLS Next. Don't forget all those kids' games and all their parents and all that stuff. And it includes the Mexican League. What's that stupid
Campeones
league called?
Cup.
Yeah, Campeones Cup, like the stuff with MLS playing Liga MX, all that stuff. Now, it doesn't include CONCACAF Champions League, but it includes the Interliga one. So, you know, all that stuff is already built into this thing. So it's set up already to encompass this explosive level of growth that we see coming. And I 100% agree with you that the money they're going to get now is more than it's worth, but the money that they're going to get at the end will be less than it's worth because of the idea that you should see with the U.S. men's team making the World Cup now and then having the World Cup here, that with more teams now, right? That's the first one with the extra teams in it, you know, and more venues and more games, and the explosion is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to clarify something I said earlier, so while it will not be part of the Apple TV Plus $5 a month package, it will be an additional thing on top of that. They were very clear that there would be a select number of games that they would offer to subscribers of Apple TV Plus as free additions. So maybe like a game of the week or a big game, in the same way their current offering on Friday nights with Major League Baseball is free to subscribers to Apple TV Plus. So if you, you know, are watching Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus on whatever device you're doing it, you'll be able to get a few Major League Soccer games. But if you want the whole kit and caboodle, kids, it's going to be some unknown monthly or seasonal per season cost to be determined. And again, as we started off with this, I have no idea what that number is going to be, but I don't think it's going to be $25-$30.
Yeah. Well, you'll certainly see cross promotion. I mean, would you see national game? Would you see your local team game? I mean, they could fence that stuff out and give you the game that you might.
Oh yeah. Then, that's a great idea. Yeah. That's a good point. Like
a couple of marquee local games, you know?
Yeah. All right. I don't want to beat this to death too much, because I'm sure between now and the next pod we do, there'll be even more stuff come out that we don't know yet. But Dan, anything else you want to comment about on this?
One thing on the pricing, just the fact that they're giving it away to every season ticket holder of every team in the league probably indicates it's not going to be some exorbitant amount that they're going to feel the loss of those sales.
Well, again, I think as Buzz said, I think one of the weird kind of shady aspects of that is they haven't really defined what a season ticket holder is. Is it, you know, is it the people that buy the flex pass, or is it the people that buy a full season, you know?
I mean, I'd assume it'd be the full season.
You know? Yeah, I would assume so, like, too.
It'd be nice if they did a freebie for media like they used to do with MLS Live.
Ah, that's right. The good old days. Yes. Well, I guess we'll see. Like I said, I'm sure in the coming days we'll learn more about this deal. I'm interested to see what the front office in Dallas decides to do with their situation. Clearly, you know, something to think about is that, because I know that they're going to be able to do pregame and postgame stuff. But a big aspect of Gina Miller's, role in the club is her history and background and her involvement in all of that packaging of that content. And I wonder what happens to that now. Is that something they'll continue to do, or they'll try to expand on, or they'll reduce on? I don't know. I mean, I think that's all very much TBD at this point, but certainly I think we're all definitely going to miss Steve and Mark as a duo, because I do believe we are very lucky to have the best play-by-play and analysis guy in the league, and I'm worried we're not going to get them anymore.
One small thing I noticed was the idea of like a whip-around show, like a red zone-style show.
And they said that appeals may to last more up younger. To 6 hours.
Yeah, that appeals to a little more of a younger demographic than an older, but it's definitely like a modern, you know, kind of thing. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and works, and whether it appeals to people too.
The other thing that they talked about was trying to set a regular schedule, like a Wednesday night game and a Saturday night game. I was talking to a guy in a pretty high, powerful sports media position here in the area. And, you know, he's a soccer fan, but not an MLS fan. And he said one of the reasons why he's not an MLS fan is he just doesn't know when the games are. Like he said, I have no idea on a regular basis when Dallas plays. And because
I've been complaining. That's you're dead on the money about that. I've actually been complaining about that since Andy Swift was GM of the Burn. That's how long I've been complaining about the fact that the games are at a different time every single week, different days, different time slots. Sometimes they shift 30 minutes this way, that way, that there wasn't like the NFL's noon, 3, 7, like, you know, exactly when the games are on all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll even kill this the 8 minute delay. You know, a 7:30 kickoff should be 7:30, not 7:38.
Well, I guess we'll find. Like I said, I just have a feeling there's a whole bunch of other shoes about to drop on this deal, and all they wanted to do was get the money number out there because they had been pimping it. Yep. You know, they had been promoting that as a goal for so long. And to your point, Dan, I think trying to get this out before the market selection for World Cup 26 was also important to them. Speaking of which, that is happening. So by the time you're probably listening to this, I'm going to assume, unless you're one of the really hardcore pod listeners, we get this up and running, you know, before lunchtime Thursday, we will know what markets have been selected for the World Cup. We will not know what games have been assigned to what markets. I'm told that won't come until probably another few weeks after that. There's an article, I think it's in Yahoo, that I thought was the best review of the situation and kind of ranked all of the cities likely to get games. And they had Dallas. And who was it that wrote that? Oh, Henry Bushnell wrote this. And he had Dallas at number two behind New York and MetLife. And he also, the money quote in there was that Jerry World initially was considered for a semifinal, but it is also the only other stadium other than MetLife that is being considered for the final, and he thinks it's actually the leader in the clubhouse for the final simply because it's a dome stadium and FIFA loves the idea of being able to control the weather.
So I was confused by that because he said that there was surprise about that, but that was part of the bid book, which was released, 2 years ago now?
Yes, correct. I think it was almost 2 years ago for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, Dallas was always bidding for the final.
Well,
yeah, the other.
Okay, go ahead.
The other big thing, Peter. Yeah, sorry. The other big thing that you know this, Peter, is that Dallas is also trying to be the media center for the World Cup, which will be huge. That's a whole separate thing with tons and tons of people and big impact for the city and all that kind of stuff.
And yeah, the referee center, too.
I'm sorry, what, Dan?
And the referee center as well.
Yeah, I think it would be amazing if the World Cup final was to be played in Dallas. And I mean, I get the allure of playing it in New York / New Jersey, reality New Jersey. But there is the, you know, with climate change and everything else going on, the idea that, you know, you're risking playing the biggest sporting event in the world in an outdoor venue when you could have played it in an indoor venue with even more people watching it, because I'm 99% sure I'm correct in saying that AT&T Stadium can hold more people than MetLife Stadium, you know, and it being domed. I've felt this way for a while. My kick around show partner Andy is part of the Dallas World Cup committee, and he has said nothing to me. He has been so good at not trying to lean on anything, and I'm always constantly, you know, twisting his arm trying to get him to give me some sort of morsel or hint, and he doesn't really seem to know anything. But I'm telling you, I got a feeling in my gut we're all going to be really excited come Thursday evening when they make that announcement.
That's the hope.
I'm sorry, Dan, you said that in a very...
here's hoping. And honestly, I assume all three of us have been around the sort of Meadowlands area. It's a shithole. It's just warehouses and road.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, New York, right?
And that weird river that's like full of dead trees.
Quit pointing out all their bad things, Dan. That's not nice. That's rude to do. So that is all coming up and being announced. That we'll, like I said, remember, come Thursday, we'll know if Dallas is included, but we won't know who's getting what games. So there right. You go. Dan, we haven't had enough Dan in this pod, but I thought you did amazing job on thirddegree.net today when you posted a very lengthy article and interview. Is it Alan Reed? Is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah.
The groundskeeper. Magician.
Yeah. The groundskeeper up at Toyota Stadium. The grass has been a topic of high concern in our parts since the start of the season, and you got to catch up with the groundskeeper and heard about the removal and replacement of the pitch.
Yeah, a nice chat with Alan, and you know, thanks to FC Dallas for putting that together. Just to talk about, you know, the issue with the slipping. I know Buzz had mentioned some people that he'd spoken to talk about how the, you know, the grass never quite took from the winter, and that the previous grass that kind of underpins everything had died off. It was interesting talking to him because he gets very technical about things like growth degree days, which only you know, middle-aged dads who are grass nerds. Hey, Dustin Nation, thanks for texting me that earlier. Know all about. And the thing that kind of struck me was he said, yeah, so there were like 70 days between the first bowl game and the first FC Dallas game of the season, and there were 9 grow days. And I was like, oh wow, 9 grow days, that's pretty bad. And then I looked at what growth degree days were, and you can have like 40 of those in a 24-hour span. And in 70 days, there were 9. Like, wow. The grass just never had a chance. And, you know, I mean, something I mentioned in the article was in Europe, you know, a lot of the fields where they're kind of expecting the conditions that North Texas saw this winter and the previous was, you have that like fiber sand, that plastic thread that's you know, millions and millions of fibers are just threaded into the soil, and then the grass kind of binds to them. And so, you know, when your cleats go through it, it's not just ripping out everything. You know, here that's not really a common thing. Instead, what they do is the sod that they lay down in the summer, the Latitude 32 Bermuda grass, that's what underpins the ryegrass that they then seed in the winter. Well, if that all died off, there was nothing for the ryegrass to grow around. So, you know, that's why the start of the season, we could still see the bowl logos. Or, you know, when Buzz and I went to the first practice of the season, it looked like we were just standing on straw, and they'd actually painted the lines green because it stood out more than the white.
Mm.
But yeah, definitely give it a read. There's FC Dallas put out a really cool video on their YouTube today, which shows some of the stuff described in it, and has Alan talking a little bit about the actual process when they installed the whole field overnight, with trucks running from Austin, where the sod farm was, up to Frisco, and trying to avoid traffic on 35. So.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool note that they drove it overnight so it wouldn't have to sit in the sun if they got stuck in traffic. That's a weird little detail that's kind of cool to learn. So thanks for writing that, Dan. That was good good content, and you can find it over at thirddegree.net. I had initially pitched that you should have called it Clark and Dan Bought Better Grass, but you ignored me and went with some far wussier
to speak to article. Dan Hunt on Friday, and the last thing I would want is somebody saying, hey, this is the guy that gave a weed headline about you.
Well, and you also didn't seem to accept my suggestion that you take Dan and Clark's head and Photoshop them on top of Harold and Kumar for the article art, but that kind of has disappointed me as too, but whatever.
I'm a disappointment. I'm sorry.
You're anything but a disappointment. All right, Buzz, back to you. I think probably just a little bit of talk might be appropriate for the U.S. men's national team. Again, since we last talked, they beat Grenada. Jesus had his 4-goal blast, and then they went down and played in those ridiculously, but as I considered it to be incredibly fun to watch, conditions in El Salvador. He played the last 45 minutes and was, like many people on the team, largely ineffective. Oh, and Paul Arriola got a red card.
Yeah, well, don't forget Paul had that goal against Grenada too. So it was like 5-0 FC Dallas versus Grenada. Yeah, you got to be pleased for Jesus with that kind of performance. That obviously, I think that sort of, I don't think it by any means cements him as like the guy, but it certainly puts him firmly in the discussion of like, is he going to be in the team? Could he be the guy? Now, when you don't have anybody, for me, when you don't have anybody that's just destroying people for the national team, like we do right now, Jesus looks pretty good from time to time. Pepe's looked pretty good from time to time. In the past, there's been other guys that look pretty good from time to time, but nobody has like nobody has firmly grasped that position. So really, what I think it's going to come down to is the form of anyone that's a candidate for that position, their form over the next 3 or 4 months, over the back end of the MLS season, over the start of the European seasons. If Sargent scores 15 goals in the first 12 games of the EPL season, or whatever league he's in now, did they get demoted? You know, that's going to get him in the mix. If Jesus reproduces his first half in the second half, he's going to be in there. If Pepe gets going for Augsburg, he's going to be in there, right? So that position is still wide open. Jesus, I think, did phenomenal. You saw how effective his movement was against Granada. Not so great, as nobody was really great except for Musa in the game against El Salvador, and he looked so good. That was like my one takeaway from that game was like, if you didn't already think Musa was a lock, you should now after that game, because he was what makes him special really stood out in that game to me, you know, and seeing Weston start to get some of his group back too was also really nice. So Berhalter's going to have his team in his mind almost set. There's probably just a few things that are up for grabs, a few starting spots that are up for grabs, but I love seeing Jesus get a chance and do really good things, man. The list of people that have scored 4 goals in a game for the national team, it's like, what, 6 people ever? That's an amazing list to be on.
I'm sorry, I was just distracted because I was seeing some tweets while you were talking that they're now rumored that the U.S. men's national team will play Saudi Arabia in September in Spain as its final World Cup tune-up.
Well, I think the guys on the broadcast said that they have 2 more games they're going to play before the World Cup
in September. Yeah, there's a September window. They just everybody's trying to schedule their last 2 games. So,
yeah, you know, again, like with only 2 games to play, like that's a very small window to impress Greg for a national team spot. You're going to have to do it with your league play. If you're on the fringe, you know, Pulisic, he's in, Musa in, Wale, right? But if you're one of the guys that's in that next 10 to 20, that's either just in or just out, like, and anybody at striker at this point is just in or just out. I mean, we have no clue who's going to get in or out at striker. So it's going to be your league games that are going to determine whether he's going to pick you or not. Right. I mean,
yeah,
2 games left is not going to decide it. You know, it's going to be your league play.
Yeah, Dan, we were talking on the radio show, Andy and I, about how, you know, I just have this weird feeling this World Cup, because of it, the way it's scheduled and all of the weird intangibles that are going on. I just wonder if this is the World Cup, kind of like the 2016 Premier League season, where all of the big clubs are just, because of the cramped schedule and the fact that it's in the middle of league seasons, if this is the one time that maybe one other nation rises up and wins this thing that hasn't won it before. And like Andy pointed out, maybe this is the year the Dutch win it, or the Portuguese win it, or, you know, some other unforeseen nation comes up and does it. I just have a feeling that if there was ever going to be a time somebody other than Brazil or Germany or France wins it, it may be this one. And I don't know if I should include England in there or not. Sorry.
I wouldn't after the last few days.
Oh, you're one of those English fans.
No. The lineup they put out for that loss was, I mean, Christ, the FC Dallas would have beaten that lineup. It's weird when the World Cup goes to new places. You know, we went to Japan, Korea. When I went to South Africa, you get some teams making some really good runs, some interesting refereeing decisions. So it'd be interesting to see, because you can't surely see Qatar doing much of anything. So who's going to kind of fill that void? Mm-hmm. And it'd be cool to see the US with the players kind of at the end of the season, and half of the players at the end of the season and half kind of in mid-season form, getting a good run at it. I'm fascinated to see it. It's going to be the weirdest World Cup.
It is. I
did
I
you
think...
see that you see that stat today about the U.S. team? We already know they're probably going to be the youngest team there. If John Brooks doesn't rally and make the team, the only player likely to have played in a World Cup before for the U.S. will be Yedlin. If he if he even makes it, like, if, and if Yedlin doesn't make it, like if Cannon beats him out or whatever, you know, you could be looking at a World Cup team that doesn't have a single player on it that's ever been in a World Cup before.
Yeah.
Or maybe just Yedlin. So that's
hey, how Qatar can say that too.
Yeah.
Well, true. For the U.S., it's a little unusual.
And Wales.
That's true. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, I've been saying this to Andy on our show, and I really feel very strongly about it. It kind of sounds like a joke, but I really mean it, because so many people, this may be the very first real World Cup cycle they've really paid attention to for the national team, because they didn't make it last time. And I do feel a sense of responsibility to kind of like help people set their expectations and the reality of just how hard it is to play in this tournament. And just because you got a bunch of guys playing for top level teams and top leagues all over the world doesn't mean that you're likely to even get out of your group, much less win the damn thing. So I do feel a sense of responsibility just to kind of make sure everybody cools down and doesn't lose their mind if, in fact, the United States, the youngest team in the tournament, bonks out in the group stage, because that's just as likely to happen as them getting out of it.
Oh, yeah, I would consider it a successful World Cup if they get out of their group. That's a good World Cup.
I'm sorry, Dan, were you going to say something?
You said, a favorite team getting knocked out. I mean, remember defending champions France going home without scoring a single goal.
That's right. I mean,
yeah, these things certainly happen.
Well, we've seen Italy not make it for 2 years in a row. I remember a time when Spain got bonked out in the group stage, France, England. Has Germany been knocked out in the group stage anytime recently? I know I'm going to get yelled at by Andy.
I want to say after they won it, right? Didn't they get knocked out in the group stage last time?
I think so. Yeah. So, I mean, it happens, man. So, you just kind of have to go and enjoy it and soak it in. And this one's going to be really effing weird. That's definitely for sure. Buzz, before we split and go, I know you wanted to kind of just briefly talk about the fact that the transfer window is upon us or near us or coming up and, you know, and whether or not you think Dallas is going to be in the game on buying or selling players.
Yeah, well, it's specifically right around the beginning of July, maybe even July 1st. You have to look at the fact that Dallas is high in the standings, right? So they'll consider themselves in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll also need to look at the allocation order. Dallas is currently second behind FC Cincinnati. Now, you guys know enough about that, how that works, that at the end of the season, you know, more teams will be put at the top of the allocation order based on how everybody finishes. And for people that aren't aware what the allocation order is, that's for players that are coming back to the league. And it right now is the summertime, right? When most of the world is doing their transfers. Players that come back to the league that have left the league and come back, like, for example, Tanner Tessman is on there, just as an example. I'm not saying he's coming back. I think he's actually really happy where he is. But guys that are high up in the national team pool have to come back via allocation order. So on the list of paid people, there's a list of like 40 names, maybe something like that, of players that if they want to come to MLS, they have to go via the order. And for Dallas to be second, if you're going to take advantage of that, it pretty much has to be this window coming up. So if you're in it and you have that possibility, you know, where is a position or what positions might you go after somebody? And I thought it would be worth talking about. For me, I think there's a couple of spots on the team that are worth discussing in terms of your ability to perform and go deep into the playoffs. You know, right now, for example, at the 9 position, other than Jesus, we've pretty clearly seen that Frank O'Hara can't start a whole lot of games. So perhaps a depth piece at that position at the 9. I think you don't want Paxton to start 34 games. You want him to be at his best in the playoffs, because he's one of these few difference makers. So a guy that can start some games in there. Now, do we think it could be Thomas? Does the club think it could be Thomas? I don't know. We haven't even seen him yet, but it makes me wonder about that position. You might also look perhaps at right back. Like, I quite like Ima Tuomasi, but me liking Ima Tuomasi's ability to play right back for like the next 5 or 6 years, and me being a coach from Spain, who may or may not know a player who might want to come back to the league, like Shaq Moore or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a better option for you. Now, I don't know any names and I don't know any things, but for me, those are the three things: depth of the nine, perhaps someone who could spell Paxton for some games, and maybe somebody that you might be able to think can upgrade right back. Now, the right back problem is that they just spent a bunch of money on Nanu, thinking that he would be that guy. You know, so there's all these internal debates going on. So I just wanted to, with the window coming up and a team that thinks they're in the mix and a team that, you remember, at the beginning of the season spoke a lot about how it was a process and how they would get into the season with what they had and they would see where it was going and see where they might want some more pieces. There was a whole lot of talk about how things might change as the season went on. So we're approaching that opportunity. So those are the three that I have my eye on. And I'd love to hear what Dan thinks. And Peter, you too. I want to hear what you guys both think about where the team might use some depth. And if you have an idea about like where even you might like to see a starter come in.
Dan, you go first.
Eh, damn it. Let's see. Right back here is a tough one because it's not been a great confidence position. But like you say, you know, it's kind of got a decent amount of potential tied to it. Potential doesn't necessarily get you deep in the playoffs, as you said. The priority's got to be... I think Paul Ariola gives you the ability to get away with the nine situation to a degree. The one thing you don't have the ability to get away with is there's just not... Unless we see Thomas getting some game time, there's just not... a viable backup for Paxton right now. Now, if Nico, you know, obviously Nico sees everything in practice and plans it out. Now, you know, for all we know, you've been on vacation. I don't get to train him very much with the time of it. You know, Thomas could have been practicing as the backup for a little bit of time and doing well. It's, God, it's sad. This break almost makes it harder to sort of say, since they would have been, they've gone from not having even like the little microcycles where they can do anything other than regen work to, well, now they've had 3 weeks to, you know, potentially work on the second formation and everything else that they've been talking about. It's going to be small pieces. It's going to be, potentially even in league pickups. You know, your Ariolas, your Farfans. That's been a great success point for FC Dallas this season. Not, you know, veering away from the South American guy that needs 6 months, or the young European guy that you hope will become something someday, but he's probably not going to really contribute for the first two seasons. And I wonder if they're going to, you know, focus on a piece that could bring more out of, Christ, I've forgotten his name.
Velasco.
That's the one. Yeah, you know, like Mauro Diaz early on was homesick, so, you know, you got the Maxiri, you got the Mauro Rosales to kind of, like, get around him and bring more out of him. Obviously, you've got a couple of Argentines already in the club, but you know, you almost wonder if they're going to say, "Hey, is there anything we can do? Any player that we could maybe look at that will make life a little bit better for you, and hopefully, just bring your help acclimate you further."
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's all great insight, and I think it's obvious to me that the club really went out of its way to spend a lot of money and go through a lot of effort to bring in the people they have, and the club has surprised me so much in how they've managed their roster this year that maybe I shouldn't be surprised if they do make a move or a significant move coming up this summer. But my sense is that, you know, man, that with all the activity they did, it would really blow me away if they did something of significance. Like if they go pick up a young guy here or there that really is just here as, you know, one of those deals where they, you know, kind of like the Cibulski Schoen deal where clearly they bought the kid because they thought they could turn him at some point. Maybe they still can. I don't know. That felt like more of a business deal than an on-field roster addition, Buzz, if you know what I mean by that. Like, that was more like for the future sale thing than anything he was going to add to the team. And if he did add to the team, then that was just kind of a bonus. So I don't know what they plan on doing this summer. If anything, I'll be surprised if they do anything of significance. If I had to pick a position of real need, I would love for them to have another option at the nine. Obviously, I think that's my biggest thing. My secondary thing is I really would like a veteran, another veteran presence of quality in the midfield that they can turn to in one of those center mid positions.
Yeah. The one thing, like you mentioned Schoen, unless I'm forgetting somebody, they actually still have two of those U22 initiative spots available. Because Velasco is a young DP, which is different, mm-hmm. you know, and by the fact that they have a young DP as their third DP, and Jesus is too, frankly, now that I think about it, I think, you know, they have the ability to use those additional U22 spots. So maybe you're right. Maybe it might be more of a Schoen style investment guy. And we shouldn't discount Schoen, by the way, in terms of like back half of the season, the coach's ability to get him to be, you know, contributing among the other three wingers they have, which are contributing, you know, Velasco, Areola, and Obreon. You'd like to see Schoen get in that mix too, because he did do some good things last year. The last sort of thing I thought about is that if you want to try and play with more three at the back, you might need another center back because, you know, Bartlett's not close to being, I don't think, a real legit MLS contributor. I know they stuck him in somewhere, but that's not. And Quiñones, while I think he's got some potential, he yet also doesn't look like a look. So, you know, center back also depth-wise could be a shout. You know, where are they going to go? And in this window, I think they'll do something. I think that you don't want to, as we often talk about in this league, the amount of parity in this league is tight. Remember that right now, like second place to like 11th place is only like two wins difference, I think. You know, so you can go on a really fast hot streak and go from the bottom to the top of this league. So if you sit on your laurels and stand pat, people are going to pass you. You know, guys are going to get healthy. Other teams are going to go out and get guys. So I think you owe it to your team when you're in second or third place to go out and do something and try and improve yourself in some capacity. And they have assets that they need to try and take advantage of, or that you lose them. Cause remember too, that like, we have no idea how much allocation money, the TAM, GAM, whatever that they still have, but that stuff can go away too. If you don't burn it. Now they've burned a lot, but you know, some of it, if they have some sitting there, they need to use some of it before it goes away. It doesn't last forever. So they may be sitting on assets, and they talked about the process, and they talked about how they would do things down the line, that down the line is approaching. So are you in it or not? You know, is this the long-term thing or is this now? Have you changed your position based on what Jesus is doing? Do you now think you have a shorter window to take advantage of him before he's gone? Right. So maybe they might be more all in on this season than they might've been before, you know, based on what they're doing.
And so that window opens, what, July 1st?
I believe it's technically July 1st. I know that there are some other teams that have lined up players that they can't begin training and playing until the contracts change
Kalini
over
in LA
at the beginning of July. Yeah, guys like that. Guys that have already signed, but their other team's contract isn't up yet. Pretty sure the MLS window opens around July 1st or maybe on July 1st. So I would assume that FC Dallas has already been working on stuff this whole first part of the year. At least they should have been. So if they're going to do something, we probably will see it happen early in July, I would think, if they're going to make a move.
Okay. All right. Well, look at us, boys. No games really to speak about, and yet we somehow still filled at least an hour and a little bit more. I'm proud of us. Let's all pat each other on our back. All right.
Okay.
All right, Dan, well, thank you, sir, for your hard work and effort and good writing today, by the way.
Thank you. And that was an excellent Twitter Spaces yesterday.
Oh, I felt really weird about it. It was very stream of consciousness on my part, and I was a little concerned that it was too busy, but thank you. I appreciate that. And Buzz, thank you, sir. I hope you travel safe on your way home back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, sir.
Thank you, and appreciate you putting this thing together. Don't forget to do the Soccer 90.
I won't. I'll do it right now. Don't forget to shop Soccer 90 for all your FC Dallas, U.S. national team, and international club jerseys, tees, and scarves. Check out these new U.S. men's national team youth jerseys featuring Ferreira, Pepe, Pulisic, and McKennie. In addition to that, the Adidas FC Dallas Unity pre-match tops are now in stock, but supply is limited, so when they're gone, dude. And remember, all Third Degree Podcast listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code Third Degree at checkout at soccer90.com. Live it, love it, wear it. All right, guys, thank you so much, and thank you, FC Dallas Curious listener. We will speak to you next week on another episode of Third Degree, the podcast.
World Cup announcement, let's go!